Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today's Wednesday, January 17th. I'm Stephen Overly. There's a lot of talk about artificial intelligence being built into more of the products we use every day. Like a refrigerator that can order your groceries, or a toothbrush that tells you when you've missed a spot. Both of those actually exist, by the way. But what's talked about less is the spectrum needed to run all of these devices. Those are the invisible radio waves that move all sorts of data around, from GPS to Wi-Fi. There's a finite amount of spectrum, and it's increasingly crowded.
If you want faster phones, if you want all these new connected devices to work, whether it's your IoT devices that are just communicating a little bit or the very high bandwidth things that people are now doing online, you need access to spectrums.
That's Assistant Secretary of Commerce Alan Davidson, and he leads the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. That's called the NTIA for short. His agency has a new national strategy designed to combat this potential spectrum crunch, while at the same time, it's working on how to hold people accountable when AI goes wrong. They're both tall orders. For the show today, I caught up with Assistant Secretary Davidson on the sidelines of CES, where he told me why both issues matter and what's standing in the way. What are your impressions of CES?
CES is a wonder. I've been coming to this show for probably over 20 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, which is dates me a little bit, but I love it because it really is like a window into innovation and where things are going in the future around tech. And every year there feels like there's a theme.
What's different this year, I was going to ask?
Well, it's really, I think this sort of, I guess there's two things that really have stuck with me just in the last day or two. One is AI is everywhere, right? And that's, we're going to move to this space where it's becoming more real and we are really demanding intelligence in our products. And products will probably feel like something is off or maybe they're a little stupid if they don't have some intelligence built into them. And you can really see people, there's a lot of conversation about AI. I'm not sure it's really AI or machine learning in everything.
Sometimes it's a label that just gets slapped on.
Absolutely. I'm not even sure I've seen a booth that didn't have the word AI in it somewhere, the initials AI in it somewhere. But I think it speaks to the moment, which is that people's imagination's been captured by AI.
Right.
The other thing I will just say, and this is partly because of where I sit, connectivity is still king, right? Like, ubiquitous connectivity is still the killer app that makes almost everything here run. That was not true 15 years ago, right? Like, that people were not expecting their TV to be connected or their refrigerator to be connected.
Right.
But the fact is that ubiquitous connectivity means we now expect that everything we have is going to have a connection to the world or many things. And we are building a lot of all the intelligence, all the AI, it requires that basic connectivity layer. And of course, we do a lot of work on that at NTIA on broadband and wireless spectrum.
It places new demands on our infrastructure. It you sort of exacerbates some of these, you know, have and have not questions.
Exactly.
Around equity, all of which I know NTIA sits at the
center. Oh, we're thinking about it. I mean, we've been talking about the digital divide in this country for over 25 years. It's amazing. Here we are in 2024. There are millions of households in America that cannot get internet connections, high-speed internet connections, and you need them to be able to take advantage of all the innovations we're seeing here.
Right. Well, I want to ask you, one of the reasons you're here at CES is speaking on a panel around global competition and AI regulation.
Right.
It seems to me that there is a race right now to regulate AI. Is that how you see it?
There is a race, but I'll say, you know, the starting point for us has been AI is going to bring enormous benefits to people. And you see it here at this show, and we really feel it. This is going to transform many sectors of our economy. We're only going to realize that benefit if we also make sure we're dealing with the very real risks that exist today. And not the in the future exists, you know, are the robots coming, you know, whatever. The real risk today about privacy, security, bias in systems. So we have to figure out how to address those. And I will say the good news is that I think governments around the world and the U.S. government have really jumped into that conversation wholeheartedly. The Biden administration published its executive order on AI a couple of months ago. It is the most ambitious, I think, effort by any government now to address the big issues that are out there, opportunities and issues. And this question about competition and openness is a homework assignment we got.
I was going to ask you how you think the executive order stacks up against, you know, the EU, which obviously has its AI Act.
Right.
China has put forward some of its own AI rules.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about the benefits and the risks of AI. Does it matter who gets there first in terms of regulating, you know, whether we realize those?
It absolutely matters. And doing this right, it's a high stakes issue because if we, you know, we are very aware that we need to make sure we're fostering innovation and not putting too heavy a hand, making choices that are going to make it hard for innovation. At the same time, we really believe that innovation happens best with guardrails and that we need to put some rules of the road in place, right? So that the worst behaviors that we can all agree are not what we want these systems to, the way we want these systems to work, whether it's about safety or about privacy or about bias, that we're giving people a guidance about what those rules of the road should look like so that there's a room for innovation within those guardrails.
Well, and I want to talk about those guardrails and particularly NTIA's piece of sort of this AI regulatory question, which I know is really centered a lot on accountability, right?
Right.
Questions of who is responsible for making sure that these AI systems are trusted and safe. How close are you to answering that question?
In some ways, very close, and in other ways, part of this will be that there's a lot of work to do. So the backdrop of this is we started a project around AI accountability was probably about a year and a half, almost soon after I started in this role, and before ChatGPT had really captured people's imagination, with this idea that if you are going to trust an AI system or a model, you have to have a way to go back and kind of audit and assess, did it do what it said it was going to do? Was it as private as it said? Is it as safe as people represent? And in the same way that we have financial audits to figure out if, you know, companies or organizations are actually solvent, we need to create an assessment and audit ecosystem for AI so that you can go back and assess, did this model really do what it's supposed to do? And so like financial audits, we need an ecosystem of auditors. And that whole idea is it's contemplated by other regulators around the world, the EU AI Act. We know we have to build it here too. So part of what we're doing, and we launched a big report, we got a lot of comments in. That report's going to be released soon.
What's going to be in it?
We're going to talk about how you build that ecosystem. Right. I think that is really the main thrust of this, which is how do you create the rules of the road and, you know, people who can then assess systems. It's going to be a huge project.
Can you preview anything for us about what those recommendations will look like?
That was the preview. There
that
we go.
Was, right. That's all I can get.
It's going through a clearance process. We're going to have a report out, and I hope it's going to be weeks, not months, I think. So we're hoping to get it out relatively soon. But it's a big, I think it's one really important piece of the puzzle, which is how do we, you know, in the U.S. and around the world, create this, you know, community of people and the standards to be able to see when a company says, "This, I'm using this system and it is going to keep you safe." How do we make sure we can trust that?
I wonder if, you know, there are any cautionary tales from how we've allocated responsibility around the internet. You know,
right.
That we're still, however many years later, debating who's responsible for what. We don't need to revisit Section 230 on the podcast today. We talk about it often, but
right.
I wonder if there's lessons you take from that into this AI era.
I think there is a lot to learn. There were a lot of really good choices we made at the rise of the internet, and it continues to be something that powers the connectivity it offers, powers so many of the innovations we see today. There were things that we still need to get right. Privacy is another good example. What I'm encouraged by, and I think something that we really want to push, is early engagement by policymakers around AI. And it may not feel that way because we've been having this conversation for a few years now. But I think when you look at it relative to the development of other technologies, it's still in the early days. And there is deep engagement from governments, right? Biden administration, the president himself, the vice president, they talk about this. They are interested. Governments around the world, state governments, city governments, all now grappling with the big issues. And that is far earlier than we were involved in some of these prior generations of technology. And I think keeping that engagement up is going to be really important in the next few years.
That's, yeah, one thing we hear a lot is that there is a lot of talk earlier in the process. The question is going to be, does it lead to action?
Well, and, right. And I do think also as a, you know, being in the seat now in government, I keep saying this, we've captured the public's imagination right now. It won't necessarily stay that way.
Right.
But ChatGPT, you know, AI, you've been covering this. AI has been coming for a while now.
Yeah.
But ChatGPT did something special. It really captured the public's imagination, and there's energy, and we have to take advantage of that.
Yeah. I think their imagination and you know, perhaps more cynically, fear to some extent, right?
And
people are going to expect some answers to alleviate that.
Absolutely.
So let's talk open source AI, because that's really the focus of your remarks here at CES. What's your, you know, concern or take there?
Well, so there are these very big questions about what people call sort of open weights or open source AI. It's the idea that of making these advanced models more widely available to a broader set of people and players. And it raises real risks. Like, people are concerned if you take these extremely powerful models and make them available for anybody to use without safeguards, are there real security privacy risks that come with that? At the same time, we're keenly aware of the competition aspects. If you have the most powerful models controlled by a very small set of companies, that's not ideal. And we know that it's very powerful if you can democratize access to these technologies. It's good for innovation. It actually can be good for safety and security.
Right.
The executive order that the president signed a few months ago gave NTIA a homework assignment, which is to do a study on this very issue about making these model weights, making AI open in this way. So we have a report that we're going to be working on. We're doing a big set of consultations around it. We're putting out a request for comment shortly. And the good news so far, I think, is that we've learned that there's a real gradient of openness and that we have to be able to find ways to support innovation and competition, but also protect safety and security as we open up these systems.
I often talk to people about kind of a tension point there between the openness of a system and the accountability question, right? And it sounds like your agency is trying to find the balance between the two.
It's a great point, because the two really do go hand in hand, thinking about accountability and also thinking about openness and how it can support accountability, or how accountability can make sure that open systems are safe and secure.
We'll be right back. We started the conversation a bit talking about connectivity, and I want to come back to that question. The other area where NTIA, I think, really influences some of these emerging technologies is around, you know, the allocation of spectrum, you know, essentially
right.
The waves that all these technologies share data on and need to communicate. What are the demands, you know, as we stand here at CES among every AI gadget in the world, you know, what are the demands that that's going to put on our infrastructure?
It's a great question. You know, spectrum is this unseen force that actually powers so much of all the modern devices that we know and love, from our cell phones, of course, to, you know, satellite weather predictions and research and so many other things. Radar. It is also it's an incredibly valuable and increasingly scarce resource, right? And so in that setting, we really need to be doing all that we can to make the most valuable use of the spectrum
right.
that we have, and make sure we're fueling this continued demand. The demand is increasing, right? So we hear it from the private sector all the time. If you want faster phones, if you want all these new connected devices to work, whether it's your IoT devices that are just communicating a little bit, or the very high bandwidth things that people are now doing online, you need access to spectrum. So we are going to continue. We just released administration just released a national spectrum strategy about 2 months ago.
Right.
It was a huge amount of work to get that going, and it gives a roadmap for the next, you know, hopefully for the next decade, of where we're going to go to be able to do the hard work of getting that more spectrum and being more efficient.
What's the first step?
I think the first step, there's two big things that we're really doing. One is identifying a series of bands, like parts of the spectrum that they're used now, but studying them to figure out how we could free them up. And often that's about moving the uses that are there, being more efficient. And then the second is just having a good way of talking about the future with bringing the private sector in more, understanding their needs, thinking about what 6G is going to require, and then also being really efficient about sharing spectrum. I think that's really a huge part of the future.
Can everyone get along and play in the same spectrum sandbox, I guess?
That is a great way of putting it. And we are really working on new systems. So people, a lot of times, part of the spectrum that somebody needs to use, but only periodically. And when it's not being used, if others can. And that those kinds of spectrum sharing systems we've been exploring, and it will be a way to use spectrum much more efficiently.
Well, it wouldn't be a Politico podcast without a couple of Capitol Hill-centric questions.
Sure.
But with that national spectrum strategy, how difficult is that to implement, given that the FCC's spectrum auction authority has lapsed?
It is not good for our country for that auction authority to stay lapsed. I talk to people around the world. Our auction system for spectrum has been a model for people around the world. We need to keep it up. And it's really important that Congress move forward. And we've said this repeatedly. And I think people know it. It's just hard in this environment. But we need to find a way to get that auction authority reauthorized.
The other question on the Hill is, I heard you talk to lawmakers about the idea of some sort of spectrum package happening this year. What's the path forward in an election year for a spectrum package on Capitol Hill?
A spectrum package would be important because, in addition to auction authority, there are other things that we can be doing to be better about how we repurpose spectrum, to promote these ideas we talk about in the spectrum strategy. And in doing so, we also can create billions of dollars in potential revenue for the federal government. So it's really a win-win. The beauty, I think, of this package is it's got bipartisan support. These are not issues around spectrum that cut along party lines. Leading Republicans and Democrats care about this issue, understand why it's so important for our economy. And so I think if there is political support, it's just about finding political will in an election year and to actually move something. So we're, you know, cautiously optimistic. I think there is an opportunity, but it really will be on about Congress trying to find out whether it can do it.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you for joining us here on Politico Tech.
Excellent. I'm excited to be here, and thanks for having us.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you here tomorrow.